You know, there's a reason for cautionary tales.
Then why don't more people heed their warnings?
I don't know, but after they hear my new show, they will think twice.
Oh yeah? About what?
Eating Tide Pods, playing with Ouija boards, talking to Karens, you name it. If you should heed caution, we're talking about it.
Check out Harper's brand new podcast, Cautionary Tales with Harper. Available on Apple Podcasts and wherever you download podcasts.
And be sure to press subscribe and give us a review.
Cautionary Tales with Harper.
Subscribe wherever you download podcasts today.
A man allegedly shows up to deliver pizzas to a remote building. Soon after, he finds himself being forced to rob a bank with a collar bomb strapped around his neck. Despite his pleas for help from the police, the man simply sat and waited in the parking lot for the inevitable to take place, ending his life as the bomb ignited. Today, who put the bomb around his neck? On the dark side of Wikipedia.
Sometimes the human mind goes to dark places. Sometimes those dark delusions turn into reality. A reality so shaded and gray, once all is said and done, the healthy mind is drawn into the documented retelling of these tragic events, trying to find logic, reason, and understanding where there may be none at all. This is the dark side of Wikipedia.
Brian Douglas Wells was an American pizza delivery man who was murdered during a complex plot involving a bank robbery, scavenger hunt, and homemade explosive device near his hometown of Erie, Pennsylvania. Following an attempt to rob a PNC bank and while surrounded by police, Wells was murdered when an explosive collar locked to his neck detonated. It's known as the collar bomb or pizza bomber case. The incident was shown live on television. Wells' involvement in the plot is a matter of controversy. Investigators concluded that a federal prosecutor's indictment alleged Wells was a knowing participant in the bank robbery, but was told the bomb was fake and did not know his co-conspirators intended for him to die. Wells' family said he was not a willing participant in the incident. So today on the dark side of Wikipedia, it is the death of Brian Wells. And who put the collar bomb on this man? If this sounds familiar and you're going, where have I heard this before? Netflix and the documentary Evil Genius is where you've heard it before. And that four-part series.
It didn't happen that long ago.
No, it didn't happen that extreme long ago, but I am grateful that the footage of Brian Wells' death was not in high definition. I didn't want to see it in standard def, but it's in that doc, but high def would have made it all the more scarring. But I'm not a big fan of watching anyone die. We'll just throw that out there because that needed to be said. But it's a weird, weird story. Tony and Carol Hughes joining you in today's episode.
So you texted me over the weekend and you're like, have you seen this? And
yeah.
I'm like, no, but I'm going to watch it. So I did. And after watching it, I probably have as many questions as I did before I watched it.
Yeah.
It's very complicated, but there's just parts of it that still don't make any sense to me.
There are so many extreme personalities in this thing that have so many mental illnesses going on. It's just like the perfect storm of what the fuck? Because they're just so strong and opposing and vindictive against each other. And then at the same point, like vulnerable to each other as well. And it's such a bizarre story, but we'll dive into this. And our thought, honestly, we're talking off the air, was maybe by going through the Wikipedia entry, we'll make more sense of it than how we felt after watching the documentary. And it's not an insult
to
the...
That's my hope, is to get a little bit more clarity.
I'm not saying an insult. It was a good documentary. It's
really good. It's highly worth watching.
It's just so confusing as far as these people and where they went. So I'll continue on here into the death of Brian Wells on the dark side of Wikipedia. The multiple aspects of the crime meant the Federal Bureau of Investigation led an investigative task force in conjunction with the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, ATF, and the Pennsylvania State Police, PSP. It is the only crime of its kind. CNN described it as one of the most complicated and bizarre crimes in the annals of the FBI. The incident has gained extensive coverage in mass media, including Netflix series Evil Genius. A federal grand jury indicted Marjorie Deal Armstrong and Kenneth Barnes on charges of bank robbery, conspiracy, and weapons charges. Fellow co-conspirator William Bill Rothstein had died, and his roommate Floyd Stockton was given immunity from prosecution so he could testify against Deal Armstrong. In 2008, U.S. District Judge Sean J. McLaughlin sentenced Barnes to 45 years in federal prison. 2 years later, Deal Armstrong was sentenced to life in prison. Brian Wells, who was murdered, was born in Warren, Pennsylvania, to Rose and Harold Wells, the latter of whom was a Korean War veteran. In 1973, when Wells was a 16-year-old sophomore, he dropped out of Erie's East High School and went to work as a mechanic. Conspirators involved at Keith Barnes' home, he, Marjorie, Deal Armstrong, and William Rothstein discussed ways they could make some money. Deal Armstrong suggested Barnes kill her father, Harold Deal, so he would receive an inheritance. Barnes told her he was willing to do this for $200,000. The collar bomb bank robbery plot was hatched to obtain enough money to pay Barnes to kill Deal Armstrong's father in return for a reduced sentence. Barnes later told investigators Deal Armstrong was the mastermind of the crime and that she wanted the money to pay Barnes to kill her father, whom she believed was wasting her inheritance. Deal Armstrong, Barnes, and Rothstein seemed to have had issues with compulsive hoarding. So are we making any more sense at all yet? Are we connecting?
No, not yet.
Not yet? No dots have been connected?
Because even, like, the whole, this is another one of the questions, and she kind of does address it and maybe it will coming up. But that she would pay that guy $250,000 to kill her dad, yet we haven't gotten there yet. Murder is not out of her wheelhouse.
Yeah.
So why would you need $250,000 to do something that you could have done? And if she's doing it to get his inheritance, and she would have gotten the inheritance, then she could have paid him.
And wouldn't it just be a lot easier just for her to go over there and, you know, slip something in his Wheaties? You know, I mean, if that's what you want to do.
Yeah.
Why would you, number one, $250,000 for a hitman? Is that the going rate these days?
Most times it's like $5,000 or $10,000.
I mean, really? Yeah. I mean, at least from the knowledge I've seen in all the murder shows that I've watched, it's usually between $5,000, $10,000, $15,000 maybe for a hitman from what I've seen on these shows. I'm not on the dark web seeking out hitmen, but $250,000. And then the way to get it is you rob a bank with a man who has a collar bomb on him.
Yeah, we haven't even got to all my questions about that.
Like, okay, that doesn't...
That does not make sense to me.
The only way I can make any sense of this is the way that this woman was thinking, and she's bipolar, but this doesn't, what's going on here does not describe bipolar. It's an insult to bipolar, because it's so out there. But she is mentally ill. But is there something going on there where somehow the idea of, she can connect the dots that if her father is killed, she'll get an inheritance. Okay. She connected those dots, but, or is dead, she gets an inheritance. But does, then the idea that's presented of going and robbing a bank to pay off the hitman, is there something working in her mind that says, yes, this is the best way to do this because you need the money to pay the hitman, rather than just, why would you even do that step? Just cut that step out, go do it yourself or find someone to do it for less.
And then there's a whole other side story with the other guy, the Brian guy.
Yeah.
Because his family was trying to get him out of his home. I think he needed some money. So maybe he needed money as well.
It's bizarre.
But like, I don't know. As we go on, there will be so many questions.
Let's continue on and see if we can answer any more questions here as we continue into the death of Brian Wells, as seen on the Netflix series Evil Genius, here on the dark side of Wikipedia. Marjorie Deal Armstrong had a history of suffering from multiple mental illnesses, including bipolar disorder, since her early teens, and seems to have been a serial killer. Before her mental health deteriorated in her 20s, Deal Armstrong was an exemplary student in high school and earned a master's degree from Gannon College. In 1984, she shot her boyfriend, Robert Thomas, 6 times as he lay on the couch, but was acquitted on claims of self-defense. Her husband and several other partners also died under suspicious circumstances. Deal Armstrong died from breast cancer in prison on April 4, 2017, at the age of 68. Kenneth Barnes was a retired television repairman, crack dealer, and Deal Armstrong's finishing buddy. He suffered from diabetes and died in prison on June 20th, 2019, at the age of 64. William Ansel, or Bill Rothstein, was born in Mattis Rothstein and B. Virginia Briner. His father ran the Rolla Bottling Company from 1945 to 1978. Rothstein dated Deal Armstrong in the late 1960s and early 1970s. He was implicated in a 1977 murder after he gave a handgun to a friend who used it to murder a romantic rival. He later attempted to destroy the weapon, but was granted immunity from prosecution in exchange for his testimony. Rothstein was a handyman and part-time shop teacher and was part of a group called the Fractured Intellectuals, intelligent people who were not well-adjusted. Rothstein was admitted to the Mill Creek Community Hospital on July 23, 2004, having previously been diagnosed with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, showing diffuse large cell type lymphoma, and died on July 30th at the age of 60. Floyd Arthur J. Stockton Jr., born 1947, who lived as a fugitive at Rothstein's house, is a convicted rapist of a disabled teenager. He was granted immunity for his testimony against Deal Armstrong, but was never called to testify in court due to illness. Conspirators' connection to Wells. Immediately after his death, investigators searched Wells' house and found a list of people he knew, including 2 prostitutes unknown to other members of his family. One of the prostitutes he frequented, Jessica Hoopstick, knew Kenneth Barnes, who dealt crack and whose house was used by prostitutes. According to law enforcement reports, Wells participated in the planning of the bank robbery the day before and was aware of the complex plot, although he believed the bomb would be fake and would serve as an alibi if he was caught. According to an FBI affidavit, 2 witnesses confirmed that Wells talked about the robbery about a month before it occurred. Wells was seen leaving Rothstein's house the day before the incident. Investigators believe he participated in a rehearsal. It was believed Wells was killed to reduce the number of witnesses. Family and friends of Wells dispute his involvement in the bank robbery and his own death. According to them, Wells was accosted at gunpoint and forced to wear the bomb. Okay, so I ask again, any more sense being made of any of this before we get into the outline of the crime?
None,
no.
No, I still have a zillion questions. You know, and that just, once you hear that segment, that just reconfirms if she wanted her dad dead, then she had definitely the ability to do it herself.
Yeah.
Or, you know, you could find someone to do it for $5,000. I mean, they know prostitutes and crack dealers. I mean, not like all prostitutes and crack dealers are murderers. With all due respect
to prostitutes and crack dealers, we know you're not all murderers. Yeah. The more you know.
You know, there are people, and the prostitute, I can't remember her name, Hoopstick. Yeah.
Yeah.
she like does some shady ass shit, and you know, for money, and more than just prostitution, as I'm sure will be coming out here in just a little bit. And you know, so that just doesn't make sense to me that that's why they needed the money. And the whole robbery thing, as we get into it, doesn't make sense to me.
Unless it was hatched by people who were not all there. And that's
that
where...
That is the one thing. I did have a little bit of an aha moment in that last bit, because, you know, there are some people who are very smart and they are bipolar, schizophrenic, and a number of different mental illnesses, that in their brains, it's crystal clear. And you don't know because you're not smart enough to know.
Yeah. And the thing
maybe
is,
that was it.
That's what I was kind of thinking and trying to say. You said it much more eloquently than I did and directly. But that's what I was trying to say earlier, where there it's just to them makes total sense. And in theoretically, if all of these things don't go wrong, yes, that could possibly work. Or you could just cut all those extra steps out and do it this other way, this much more efficient way. But they're looking at it from this one path. And when they're stuck on that path, there's no getting off that path. That path may still theoretically lead to point B that much shorter path leads to. But when someone has this way of thinking, they're going to take the fucking turns and twists and tubes and everything. And eventually it will land at point B should nothing go wrong along the way. However, there's also 5,000 obstacles and things that could go wrong along the way of path B, where path A, there's nothing, but they still think path B is the best.
Is there even really a path A or B, or are they just really demented in a power trip to control this person?
That could be too.
And do something. Maybe the whole idea wasn't even to rob a bank.
Well,
maybe it was just to control this guy and do what they ultimately did to him.
And the letters and everything are very like ridiculously detailed. Like not how you rob a bank.
It was a scavenger hunt.
Yeah.
Go rob the bank and then go on the scavenger hunt.
That I think almost it either shows insanity or just an extreme level of narcissism to think that this is going to be pulled off the way you have outlined it in this crazy scavenger hunt 10-page bulletin that you gave him. I mean, this isn't like a fucking Mel Gibson movie from 1989. It's real life. Things don't work out that way. But I could see someone that is just so involved in the way they think and that they think they're so smart that they could not see that this could completely, the obvious is not there to them.
Maybe this will have a little bit more clarity coming up.
Yeah.
But if the idea was to get the money to help him with his debts and her to get her dad killed, then why not have set him up to rob the bank and then get the money?
I do not know.
That part just never really got answered.
I know. It makes no sense.
Let's see. Maybe coming up, it will get answered.
Let's continue on about the death of Brian Wells here on the Dark Side of Wikipedia. The bomb used in the killing consisted of a hinged collar that worked like a large handcuff to go around the neck, 4 keyholes that went under the chin, and a rectangular section that contained 2 pipe bombs and 2 kitchen timers. 1 electronic timer hung down over the chest. The device had several decoys, such as unconnected wires, a toy cell phone, and stickers bearing deceptive warnings. Wells worked as a pizza delivery driver at the Mamma Mia's Pizzeria in Erie for 10 years before his death. Just after 1:30 p.m. on August 28, 2003, the pizzeria received a call from a payphone at a nearby gas station. The owner could not understand the customer and passed the phone to Wells, who received the call to deliver 2 pizzas to 8631 Peach Street, an address a few miles from the pizzeria. The address was the location of a transmitting tower for WSEE-TV at the end of a dirt road. According to law enforcement, upon arriving at the television tower, Wells found the plot had changed and learned the bomb was real. Wells' family disputes this account of events as at the television tower. According to them, Wells was accosted at gunpoint by strangers and forced to participate. The details of events at the tower that led to the bomb being attached to Wells' neck have never firmly been established. But evidence suggests there was a struggle and that Barnes, Deal Armstrong, Rothstein, and Stockton were all present at that time. In interviews by law enforcement, Stockton claimed to be the one to put the bomb around Wells' neck. When Wells discovered that the bomb was real, Barnes said a pistol was fired in order to force Wells' compliance, and witnesses confirmed hearing a gunshot. After the bomb was applied, Wells was given a sophisticated homemade shotgun, which had the appearance of an unusually shaped cane. When Wells was instructed to claim that the three black men had forced the bomb on him and were holding him as a hostage, Wells' corpse was found within 9 pages of lengthy handwritten instructions addressed to bomb hostage, telling him to rob the bank. The instructions also included a treasure hunt, listing a series of strictly timed tasks of collecting keys that would delay detonation and eventually defuse the bomb. It also warned that Wells would be under constant surveillance and any attempts to contact authorities would result in the bomb's detonation. "Act now, think later, or you will die," was scrawled at the bottom of the instructions. Wells was instructed to quietly enter the PNC Bank at Summit Town Center on Peach Street and give the teller a fixed note demanding $250,000 and to use his shotgun to threaten anyone who did not cooperate or attempt to flee. Upon entering the bank around 2:30 p.m., Wells slid the note to the teller. The note stated the bomb would explode in 15 minutes and that the full amount must be handed over within that time. The teller was unable to access the vault that quickly and gave Wells a bag containing $8,702, with which he exited the bank. At 2:38, a witness called 911 from the bank and reported a male leaving the bank with a bomb or something wrapped around his neck. This is the first known emergency call for the incident. According to witnesses at the bank and surveillance footage, after entering the bank, Wells waited in line, and when reached the counter, he began sucking a lollipop. He appeared confident as he left the bank, swinging his cane gun and the bag of money like Charlie Chaplin, according to one witness. Around 15 minutes after Wells left the bank, he had completed his first task of the treasure hunt. He was proceeding with the second task when police saw him standing outside his automobile and promptly arrested him, handcuffed him, and left him sitting on the ground in the parking lot. Wells said the unnamed black people had placed a bomb around his neck, provided him with a shotgun, and told him they would kill him unless he committed the robbery and completed several other tasks. The responding police officers did not attempt to disarm the device, instead focusing on clearing the immediate area of pedestrians and ensuring Wells could not detonate the device. The bomb squad was first called at 3:04 p.m., at least 30 minutes after the 911 call from the bank, and about 10 minutes after Wells was arrested. At 3:18, 3 minutes before the bomb squad arrived, the bomb detonated and blasted a fist-sized hole in Wells' chest, killing him in minutes. Traffic congestion in the area delayed the bomb squad's arrival, but personnel from the ATF still considered their response appropriately quick. WJET-TV, an Erie ABC affiliate, broadcast the event live on the air, but did not show the moment of the detonation live due to a technical problem. The station provided the footage to the FBI investigators. ABC's head of office and sister station in Buffalo, New York, the footage was subsequently leaked to Shock Jock DC 101 radio station in Washington, D.C., who posted it on his website in September of 2003. Although we subsequently removed the video at WJET's request, by then it had been posted to numerous video sharing websites. Though the note claimed Wells would gain extra time by each key found, police later traveled the note's route and could not complete it in the allotted time, implying Wells would not have had enough time to get the bomb defused. The collar of the bomb was still intact and Wells' body was decapitated, so it could be retained. Thank you. There's more deaths to come. But first, is Carol making any sense of any of this?
No. And, like, no.
No.
So, I can't even form a question. So, it makes no sense because, number one, if you see the notes, and you could Google them or just look at the Netflix documentary.
Yeah.
They're very complicated and very detailed and very long.
Yeah.
Like the note that was handed to the bank teller would take a few minutes to read and figure out what the hell this guy wants.
Yeah. It looked like the fine print of like an instruction manual. Like,
well, here- and it looks like what they think is that they printed something out and then they traced it with a pen or pencil. So it's this weird kind of handwritten font.
Yeah.
It's very strange. But then the guy walks into the bank, obviously with this thing around his neck and this weird t-shirt over it. So he doesn't look like a normal guy walking into a bank. If he really does think the bomb's going to detonate, why is he standing in line? So that makes me think he doesn't think the bomb's going to detonate, that maybe he thought this was some kind of a game.
Yeah.
Because they did say, I don't think the Wikipedia entry says it, but they did say he liked scavenger hunts. Like there was one in the newspaper. Yes. He always did.
That was an interesting thing. And that's where like the scavenger hunt really kind of makes sense. Cause this guy, you know, what they used to would say was like, oh, he's eccentric, you know, or something like that. There was clearly, you know, there was something going on with him mentally. There was, you know, either he was on the spectrum somewhere or something was going on where he just, you know, A plus B does not equal C, you know, 1 + 2 does not equal 3. There's different ways that he would look at it that others did not, probably right. To a genius level. But at, when you're at that level of thinking where it is extremely intelligent, you can miss such obvious, simple things. And that's where I think maybe all of the confusion for all of us comes in is like, it was these simple things that they just didn't see. These things that are just like, why the fuck would you do this and that to accomplish this?
Yeah.
And we're all going, I think there's way more to this because it sure appears there's way more to this. Maybe there's not. Maybe it was just so over.
And then none of it makes sense, no matter the angle.
No matter the angle, it just so overthought that it was like they were focusing on each individual goal, but then never actually seeing what the big picture goal was. So you could never reach it. I don't know. It's just
the only thing that makes sense to me as far as he's concerned.
Yeah.
Is that he thinks he's doing some kind of scavenger hunt and maybe he doesn't even realize. Maybe he thinks the bankers, the tellers are in on it. I don't know.
You know,
why else would you go in? You got this cane gun they made for him was loaded and it worked.
You know who he reminds me of? And I'm going to tell you this and you're going to go, oh, holy shit. He reminds me where his thought of his relationship and the way he handled the police of like, you know, I'll tell you more about that later. When we're discussing this later, just assuming that nothing's going to happen to him and that they will just trust him. And this is all part of his game. BTK is who he sounds like, where he believes it's a game with the media and he believed it was a game with the police and everyone was in on this fun little, you know, murder spree that's going on. He has that sort of insanely criminally narcissistic attitude where.
I wonder the difference being that BTK was kind of thought of himself as the chess master.
Yeah.
And this guy's like a little pawn on the chessboard. Like, I think he's being played somehow. Like, but it doesn't make sense.
So ultimately,
He doesn't realize what he's in, or he really does think he's robbing a bank. But then they have set it up so he can't even get him the money.
Well, yeah, Brian Wells, I think, is a pawn. But I'm talking about the Rothstein character.
Yeah.
Okay. I think Rothstein character reminds me a lot of BTK. And, and probably her.
Oh, absolutely. I agree with
you. You know, her, too, to a certain extent, except a little more off off the hinges, where, you know,
he's a crazy bitch.
But that's the thing. Like, this story really truly involves, like, if we were to just to grab two different serial killers that we've talked about on this show in the last year and then mix them up into a wild, wacky, crazy comedy on ABC on Wednesday nights at 7 o'clock, this is the fucking shit that would happen.
Except, like, it's real life.
Exactly. But that's
and
the thing.
Died.
That's why it's so twisted. It's because you grab these two insane characters that could very easily have their own, you know, mythology around them for their insanity, but you got to mix together and you get one Wacky Wednesday on ABC with a special return of Tim Allen playing Tim Taylor.
Like, none of it makes sense.
No, it does not at all.
And it's just, I feel sadness for Brian Wells and his family, especially his family, because I just don't think no one's going to willingly say, aha, a scavenger hunt with a live bomb around my neck that could kill me if I don't complete the scavenger hunt. Sign me up for that.
Yeah. Something's not firing at all cylinders there to go.
So,
okay.
Even if they force that on him, I don't think he ever knew he had a live bomb on him.
No. And I don't think I'm going to guess the IQ wasn't there or something.
He's basically charged in this whole plot, like, as an accessory to this crime. So basically an accessory to his own murder.
Yeah. Yeah. It just, I know when you put it these ways, it's like accessory to your own murder. That's true. Let's continue on and get more into the story. The case also involved two further deaths linked to the conspirators. On August 31st, 2003, Wells' co-worker at the pizza store and its only other delivery driver, Robert Thomas Panetti, was found dead in his home after suffering a drug overdose. On September 20th, 2003, Rothstein, who lived near the television tower, called police to inform them the body of a man, James Roden, was hidden in a freezer in a garage at his house. After he telephoned police, Rothstein wrote a suicide note indicating his planned death had nothing to do with Wells. Investigators did not believe Rothstein ever attempted suicide. Roden had been living with Deal Armstrong for 10 years in custody. Rothstein claimed Deal Armstrong had murdered her then-boyfriend Roden with a 12-gauge shotgun during a dispute over money. Rothstein said she subsequently paid him $2,000 to help hide the body and clean the crime scene at her house. In January of 2005, Deal Armstrong pled guilty but mentally ill to the murder of Roden and was sentenced to between 7 and 20 years in prison. She's believed to have killed Roden to prevent him from informing authorities about the robbery plot. Deal Armstrong and Barnes charged in April of 2005. Deal Armstrong told a state trooper that she had information about the Wells case, and after meeting with FBI agents, she would tell them everything she knew if she was transferred from the Muncie Correctional Institution to a minimum security prison in Cambridge Springs. During a series of interviews, Deal Armstrong admitted to providing the kitchen timers used for the bomb, stated Rothstein masterminded the plot, and that Wells had been directly involved in the plan. In late 2005, Barnes, who was in jail on unrelated drug charges, was turned in by his brother-in-law after revealing details of the crime to him. On September 3rd, 2008, Barnes pled guilty to conspiring to rob a bank and to aiding and abetting. On December 3rd that year, he was sentenced to 45 years in prison by a federal judge in Erie for his role in the crime. In January of 2006, U.S. Attorney Mary Beth Buchanan announced Deal Armstrong and Barnes had been charged with the crime as well, with Deal Armstrong as the mastermind. The deceased Rothstein and Wells were named as unindicted co-conspirators. Buchanan stated Wells had been involved in the plot from the beginning, but that his co-conspirators fitted him with a real bomb and would have exploded even if it was removed. Deal Armstrong's trial, January 29th, 2008, U.S. District Court Judge Sean J. McLaughlin made an initial finding that Deal Armstrong was mentally incompetent to stand trial due to a number of mental disorders, indicating this ruling would be reviewed after she had received a period of treatment in a mental hospital. Dale Armstrong was then transferred for treatment to a federal mental health facility in Texas. On February 24, 2009, Judge McLaughlin scheduled a hearing for March 11, 2010 to determine whether Dale Armstrong was now competent to stand trial. On September 9th, the judge determined she was now competent. In October of 2010, Dale Armstrong took the stand to testify on her own behalf as part of her defense. She asked for a change of venue, arguing extensive media coverage of the case prevented her from receiving a fair trial in Erie. Judge McLaughlin denied this request, noting that while the allegations were unusual, the news coverage as a whole has been about as factual and objective as it could be under the circumstances. On November 1st of 2010, Dale Armstrong was convicted of armed bank robbery, conspiracy to commit armed bank robbery, and of using a destructive device in a crime. On February 28, 2011, she was sentenced to life in prison to be served consecutively with the prison term imposed in 2005 for killing Roden. In November of 2012, the Court of Appeals for the Third Circuit affirmed her conviction. In January of 2013, the U.S. Supreme Court denied her petition, declaring her declining to hear her case. In December of 2015, Dale Armstrong lost a second appeal of her conviction. Hoopstick's confession. In 2018, Jessica Hoopstick admitted to her involvement in the plot. Melissa Chan of Time wrote, Hoopstick says a co-conspirator approached her to find a gopher who would be scared into robbing a bank. In the 2018 documentary Evil Genius, Hoopstick identifies the conspirator as Barnes and alleges she recommended Wells, whom she described as a pushover, admitting to setting up Wells in exchange for money and drugs. Hoopstick expressed regret for her role and said Wells had no advance knowledge of the robbery. ATF agent Jason Wick stated Hoopstick was uncooperative in 2003 and that authorities always believed that she knew more about the case. However, Wick also expressed concern Hoopstick might not be a credible witness. As the case continued to develop, the investigation garnered national media coverage in America. Less than 2 years since the September 11th attacks, many at first believed the incident to be terrorism-related. Fox's America's Most Wanted featured the story three times and publicized its newly released evidence in hopes officials could obtain new clues in the case. Due to its novelty and complexity, the story remains and retains a fascination for many people. The January 2011 issue of Wired magazine covered the story. In 2012, investigator Jerry Clark and journalist Ed Paletta published Pizza Bomber, The Untold Story of America's Most Shocking Bank Robbery, a true crime book detailing the events. In May of 2018, Netflix released Evil Genius, The True Story of America's Most Diabolical Bank Heist. A collection of news articles that reported developments in the Wells story was analyzed in a scientific study of information novelty. And Carol, that's where we come to the end of our story today.
Well, shit, Tony, I'm just as confused as I was.
Any luck at all connecting any dots in that shit show?
None of it makes sense to me.
No.
Like, I get... Once again, I go back to, I really don't think it makes any sense that Brian Wells would go, I'll go rob the bank, strap a live bomb onto me. Like, there's no willing participant who would do that.
No.
Unless he really did think there was some kind of game element to it.
Yeah.
And he really did think there was some keys. Because when they show him, which if you do watch the Netflix documentary, it's very bothersome.
Yeah.
I had to look away. I couldn't watch that part. But I could hear him.
Yeah.
But he was very calm. He was very calm. And he kept saying, this is going to go off. This is going to go off. Get it off of me. But they couldn't have ever gotten it off of him.
No.
In the way the bomb was designed, there were so many weird kind of dead end clues to a bomb. You know, if you're a person who really knows bombs, there's wires that don't go anywhere. So it would really be all these red herrings everywhere in this bomb.
Yeah.
I think the two timers from her house were that. I don't think there was a cell phone.
Yeah.
In the bomb that meant nothing. So there's all these weird things. And then, like, after, if you really want the money, then you've got him going down the road and he finds a coffee can with a note in it. Like, what?
And then go into the playhouse at McDonald's, go through the third tube on the left, jump in the ball tank, find the fifth green ball. Yeah, there'll be a note on the third green ball on the left. Then you run over to the big hamster wheel, run on it, grab the flag, and then go to the giant nostril filled with slime.
Remember, you have a live bomb strapped to you this whole time.
And the whole time, Mark Summers is like running side by side with you. It's just like Double Dare. And he's doing the play-by-play. He's like, oh my God, he's in the parking lot and he's not moving. And then suddenly, out of absolutely nowhere, Mark Summers is pushed to the side. And who steps in to save the day? The one, the only, MacGyver.
That was brilliant. You're a musical cue right there.
I can talk up a ramp or two.
I was going to say, because that's not done like later. That was in live time. That was very
It was.
Very good. Hats off, sir.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Only you and me and the five other radio people who listen to our show will appreciate it.
Wow.
Like, he hit that post.
So, yeah, like, it just doesn't make... Then the other thing that's really not addressed in this is that it wasn't so clear that this Brian guy and Marjorie were involved in it. So, like, he calls 911 to basically say, yeah, there's a body in my freezer. And they're not even connecting these two things.
No.
So the poor police department, everybody's like, another, what the fuck? And so then they start investigating that. And that poor man was like frozen solid in there.
Okay. Connect for me the dots on the man in the freezer, because.
So he was her boyfriend.
Okay.
Who lived with her for a long time. And then she killed him too. Like, she killed a lot of people.
Okay, so he would have just had knowledge of it, and that's why he was in the freezer.
So I don't even think he's connected to the bank heist. I think she just killed him.
He was like the piece that really that brought all the attention to Marjorie and Rothstein and
That's because that Brian guy is like, yeah, you might want to come check this out. She killed this guy. He's in my freezer.
And then he gets pulled into it,
weird.
Too.
Yeah. Like, why would you be like, come get the guy out of my freezer? You're going to be implicated. There's no way you get out of that.
I think it was a game of chicken between the two. I think between him and her, one of them kept threatening, I'll turn you in. I'm going to say this or that. And I bet in one of her manic episodes, she went and said, I'm calling him tomorrow. And I'm going to say this. And he thought she's probably going to do that. So out of sheer, there's no other choice to do it. Yeah.
He was calm. Like,
yeah.
Seriously. Like, if I had some, I don't even have a freezer, but if I did, and there's a body in it, I wouldn't be like, yeah. So my friend Tony killed somebody and it's in my freezer.
And especially if you're involved in it and you know you're involved in it, you wouldn't be. I mean, he was so calm. But the thing is, people who do shit like that, they have their outs. So he knew all of his outs
thought he was smart enough to. But so going back to the bank heist,
And
then the other poor delivery driver, the Pizza Hut in the movie on Netflix, they keep kind of implicating him because he shows up with all of the accomplice people all the time.
Yeah.
But he died of a drug overdose. And then the prostitute says she's the one who brought Brian to the table. Basically, they're like, hey, we're looking for a stooge to wear a bomb into a bank. And she's like, I got a guy. But so where does the other pizza guy come in?
It's like this big pack of, I mean, the evil genius is a great title because it's this pack of like evil geniuses and then people who really are not that smart that are almost like their minions. And
Is it like dumbfuck genius or something more appropriate?
That's the thing. It's like evil dumbfuck. Like, there's so many levels that are brilliant, and then they're just completely fucking insane.
And really, are there brilliant levels? I don't know.
I mean, I think there are points that are, but I think that they had the skills to be in certain areas, but they're so far gone. Things did not add up to the way that they saw them in their minds. And it just,
reminds me of people I know who have had manic episodes, and in their minds, this is what's up.
Yeah.
You cannot talk them out of it. You can't have a conversation about it because that's reality.
Yeah.
So it almost seems like it goes there. I can't say that they're actual geniuses by any means, because she's just crazy.
Yeah.
And then I was, before Tony and I did this, I said, there's so many and thens to this. And this is another and then. But it's like, and then she, when they, she does talk about Brian Wells, she is so horrible.
Yeah.
Like she's mad at him. And for no, like, that doesn't even make sense.
Like, she feels betrayed or so. I don't know. I mean,
but
so
he's dead.
I know. I don't know. And here's where the genius comes in. It's not so much in this case. It's more so in her past. And I think that's who it's alluding to.
Oh, maybe that's it. Okay,
because she was able to get away with, like, the murder of all these other people. Because this is the beginning of the entry. It's like, and it turns out, and appears to be a serial killer. It's just like, yeah, she was. And she got away with these things for so long. So I think she was at the end of her game and her mind was failing her. But for so long, she got away with so many damn things. It was crazy. And that's where the level of genius, I think, came in. But I think at the end, it was more like rusty failing evil genius. But, you know, they got away with shit for a while.
Well, I mean, until they died. Even though she was in prison, she still was maintaining her innocence.
Yeah.
It's like, she's somebody, for his family, I'm glad she's gone. Like, she'd have just been running her mouth forever.
Well, are there other plot points here that we're missing? Is it that they overthought it? Because here's the thing. If it is genius level, it's like we're completely missing what the logic is here, and why this was done in this way. It's what we were talking about, and they completely missed it and didn't realize that this was obviously not work. But I don't know.
I don't get it.
Very perplexing.
I still have no clarity, Tony.
And you never will. Unless you get like at 3 a.m., you're like, that's it. That's how it makes sense. And then you'll be like, I'm going to talk about that tomorrow. I'll text him right when I get up. And you'll wake up and be like, I don't even remember what that was.
I had a dream about that last night and it totally made sense. And
Now it's gone. I've had that. And then you look, or sometimes you write a note down and you look at the note and you're like, oh, that makes no sense. Why the hell did that make sense to me at 2 a.m? But like, that's how it goes. So anyway, that's going to wrap up today's episode of The Dark Side of Wikipedia, the episode about the evil genius and the death story of Brian Wells. Very dark one. Yeah, it's creepy. If you like the show, be sure to press subscribe wherever you download podcasts and leave us a positive review there on Apple Podcasts. We greatly appreciate that. Until next time, for Carol and all of us at Dark Side of Wikipedia, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.